Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for hanging in here for the home stretch of a wonderful conference, and thank you to the other presenters for some great and very interesting work. Today, I'm going to be speaking about the impact of changes made to improve the healthfulness of small markets and convenience stores in three Kaiser Permanente HEAL communities. The Kaiser Permanente HEAL initiative, the acronym stands for Healthy Eating, Active Living, was a multi-sectoral place-based initiative, or I should say is, and they did work in various sectors, in our, including childcare, workplaces, faith-based schools. So the stores were one part of a comprehensive project in those locations, and our charge was to evaluate the effects of specific strategies in that community. And today I'll discuss the results of the corner store work. I do have relationships, but none to disclose. our aims and our methods, one of our objectives was to determine what changes do the stores actually make. As you know, in these community initiatives, there is no really true defined intervention. It evolves within each community in a unique way. To do that, we did systematic store observations, using primarily the CX3 tool that's common in California. Then we wanted to look at the impact of those changes on purchases of target foods and beverages. For that, we did consumer intercept survey at all of the stores, and we had sales data from one store in one community only. And then we also wanted to look at what the other impacts, benefits, and challenges might be, and to do that, we did an interview with the owner and manager. All data was collected prior to and one to three years after the intervention, and except for the interviews, which were done only at the end of the intervention. Our sample included 9 stores in 3 low-income communities in California that were participating in HEAL. We intercepted 50 to 116 customers at each store at each time point, so the total sample was double that at each store. And our total sample across all stores was 705 pre and 734 post. It was a convenient sample, so it is not representative of all the purchases being made, but we did match our sample for season, day of week, and time of day to get the most comparable pre-post samples. We had pretty good response rates. It was a little low, as you can see here, at one store, at community one, but pretty high at the other stores. We did a regression on the intercept survey results, and we ran several models. Because the interventions were so distinct at every store, we did go down to the store level. We also did community level, where we combined all the data at the same community across all the stores, and we did both adjusted and unadjusted analyses. Because the sample size were pretty limited at the store level, we looked at changes over time in these various factors that you see here, and we made adjustments if any of them changed significantly using sort of a generous p-value of 0.15. And of course, at the community level, we always adjusted for store fixed effects. All of them, I'll be showing you the adjusted results here. Usually they didn't vary a lot with the adjustments. But community 2 sample size, that was one where we got 50 people per store and we could not do multivariate. When I present the intercept survey results, it's not in the footnotes, I wanted to mention that all the figures represent the percent of shoppers who purchased the item in question at time 1 and time 2. And 1 star is a P of less than 0.1, 2 stars 0.05, and 3 stars 0.01. And then if it's in green, we consider that a positive change, and the results in red were what we considered a negative change. So I'm going to present the results by community because their interventions varied so much. It's important to understand what happened at each community. Community 1 consisted of 2 small convenience stores. The customers were primarily African American, very frequent shoppers. They lived very close to the store, and most of them walked. This was unique. The community was unique in this aspect. And almost half the customers at store 1 and about 20% at store 2 get the majority of their groceries at these small convenience stores. So what changes did they make in Community 1? Community 1 made the most dramatic changes, and I've got some pictures to show you. These stores offered no fresh fruits and vegetables prior to the intervention and then began displaying them. So actually our results are zero for time 1 at this community. They also added other healthy items that you see here. They did a major store redesign. New shelving, produce bins, and refrigeration were added. They improved the store exteriors. They reorganized placement to encourage healthy selections. And very unique to this community, they did a lot of business development assistance with procurement, pricing, merchandising, and financing. And of course, at all the communities, they did quite a bit of in-store promotion, but they also did this throughout the community in this community. Here is what one of the stores looked like prior to the intervention, and here are three pictures of what the store looked like after. So as you can see, it was quite a dramatic change and quite a good selection of fruits and vegetables for a small store of this size. So what happened in terms of consumer behavior? Well, with regards to fresh fruits and vegetables, we saw consistent improvements, but the sample size was too small for statistical testing. But we were lucky to, and it seems like the percentages are very slow here, but at this store we could not collect data at the busiest time of the day because it was too dangerous once it was dark at these stores. But it was lucky to supplement this data with some sales data. And at one of the stores they did go from 0 to 72 units, and units were either pounds, bunches, or individual pieces. So this probably is, I would estimate maybe 4 times 72 would be the number of servings had we been able to convert this to servings. So actually it looks like a pretty substantive change. And remember, we can't attribute the change to the intervention because there were no fruits and vegetables offered at baseline, I think for a couple of frozen options. With regards to sweet snacks, which consisted primarily of candy and cookie purchases at these stores, we saw consistent decreases at both stores, but as you can see, even pretty big decreases did not come out statistically significant because of our small sample size, but approached significance when we aggregated the data at the two stores. So it looks pretty certain that there was a decrease in sweet snacks. And interestingly enough, there was also a decrease in chip purchases, although again, and it was at both stores, but again, it did not reach significant even when aggregated. And finally, sugar sweetened beverages were a big focus of the HEAL initiative, and you'll start to see this pattern happening. We did see this reduction in soda that was due primarily to a significant reduction at one store, but unfortunately, other sugar sweetened beverages increased quite significantly for an overall no effect in total sugar sweetened beverages purchases. And we'll start to see this trend happening, and I'll draw some conclusions about that at the end of the presentation. So that was Community 1, and those were the primary foods that we looked at. Other purchases of staples like breads, tortillas, eggs, yogurt were very, very low, and we could not do significance testing. So those were not major, these stores were not major sources of those items. Community 2 was distinct from Community 1. It consisted of two small service markets and one liquor store with a deli. The markets had a good selection of fruits and vegetables to start, especially at store 1, which really impacted our results. The consumers were primarily Latino at the two markets and about 50% Latino at the liquor store. Most lived fairly close by, but almost all of them drove to the stores. They shopped at the stores less frequently than at store 1. And a very variable amount purchased most of their groceries there. These two small markets had very good selection of groceries, however, and the average spent per transaction was $7 to $25. The changes that they made were primarily around refurbishing a healthy snack zone and refurbishing the checkout area by providing healthy options. As indicated, they couldn't make a lot of changes in fruits and vegetables except at one store. They did quite a bit of promotion. They offered quite a bit of TA on the various aspects of the transition. They made facade improvements. But most of their improvements, big improvements, were in marketing, and they made very small improvements in availability at store 1, a little bit more at store 2, and actually availability decreased at store 3. The biggest improvements in fruit and vegetable availability were made at store two because store one already had good availability to start. And you can see that in this picture. This is store one, pre and post. They had a pretty good selection at both time points. Here is an evidence of more change, though, at the checkout area, which was an emphasis of this community. Just 5 minutes? Okay. I have to start going faster. So at this community, as one would predict, we did see significant changes in fruits and vegetables purchases only at store two, which I think indicates the importance of really looking at the changes that are being made at these stores when examining your data. They also saw a significant reduction in the purchases of pan dulce, which was the primary sweet product purchased at these stores. Candy and cookie purchases were very low. We saw very consistent decreases, and it was significant at almost all levels. So we're starting to see a pattern. Likewise, they had decreases in chip purchases at all stores, only significant at store number three, but again, we're seeing a very consistent trend. And very few bought baked chips at either time point. Sugar-sweetened beverages, we see the same pattern that we saw at Community 1, where sodas decreased, but other sugar-sweetened beverages increased for a net no overall change in sugar-sweetened beverage purchases. Yeah, we'll go on to Community 3. Community 3 consisted of four convenience stores very close to the schools. The customers were very frequent shoppers. They purchased a relatively small amount at each visit. Most lived close by and drove to the store, and this was a little more mixed, about a third African American and a third Latino. Their emphasis was really on marketing. They had lower marketing availability scores than the other two communities at both time points, and store one started quite high, didn't improve. Store one started fairly high but made the most improvement. Store three started low with modest improvement in availability. And store four ended up being a self-selected control. As you will see, they made almost no change. And overall, this community emphasized availability, and there were no fruits and vegetables at either time point in store three or four. So how did this result in consumer behaviors? We saw decreases in fruit and vegetables purchases, which was not a surprise. It was not a significant decrease. And again, we see a decrease in the purchases of sweet snacks, including all of these different types, although cookies and candies predominated. Only at store four did we see an increase. And again, I would consider store four to be a control group in this case because they didn't really engage in the initiative. We saw similar findings with regards to chips, very big reductions in chip purchases, except at store three, which did decrease purchases, but it was not significant. And at store four, again, we see this increase in the purchases of chips as we did with sweet snacks. With regards to sugar-sweetened beverages, the similar trend, this particular community emphasized energy drinks. They got a good reduction in energy drinks, but overall, sugar-sweetened beverage purchases did not change. So that was a very consistent finding. The manager interviews revealed that all the managers really liked the program. They felt it either increased their sales and profits overall or had no effect. They thought it increased the sales of healthy items. And what was really interesting is they really thought it was of high benefit to the store and the community, positive response from customers, and a greater desire to eat healthy. And this was independent of how much we saw changes in sales. So it was unanimously loved. I won't get into some of the challenges, and maybe I'll just read one of these quotes. I'll read the middle quote. "Don't be scared to make the changes. Sometimes it's challenging, sure, but overall it's good for the store and the community to have healthy items. My advice would be that any store can have healthy stuff. Many people look for it and ask for it and come here because we have these things now." So in conclusion, changes in fruit and vegetable purchases only occurred where substantive improvements in availability were made. Promotion was done at all of them, but that did not seem to be the determining factor. Sweet snacks and chips, on the other hand, declined very consistently despite no apparent change in availability. But I'd like to preface that with our instrument was really a fruit and vegetable focused instrument, and therefore we didn't have good measures of availability of these items. These items might have been affected by marketing or a change in healthy foods offered or other unmeasured factor. But I did want to notice that it's the stores that actually had a positive environment that we saw this change, so this was consistent. So it may have been a result of an overall message. Only the sugar-sweetened beverages that were specifically targeted changed. Total sugar-sweetened beverage purchases remained very high in all stores. So care may be needed to be taken with regards to messaging. Maybe you better stop referring to sugar-sweetened beverages as soda. That might not be a good acronym. Or it may just be that this is resistant to change because people want some sweetened beverages, so they're willing to switch to another one, but not to water. We did look at sales at the Staples, and it was minimal to moderate, depending on the store type, and did not consistently improve. Store managers really appreciated the initiative, and again, I discussed that the changes that we saw may have been due to a combination of HEAL efforts across the community, the supportive store environment where we would see more changes, and maybe the increased motivation of the shoppers to improve their healthy eating. And so even though chips and sweet snacks were not a focus, that's an area that they felt they could make improvements in their diets. There are limitations to this study. We had no control group, so we really can't attribute it to the intervention beyond a doubt. The variable intervention means it didn't make sense to aggregate the data and emphasize the importance of a need to link findings to the changes made. It was a convenient sample, but we did make efforts to make sure our pre-post comparison was valid, but it is hard to translate into absolute amounts. Therefore, we really like it when we can get sales data, which we're doing with our current work, because we feel it's the most accurate and complete data in terms of changes in purchases. And when we do intercept surveys, there's a large need for that. You need a large sample size and very high response rates. And in ending, I'd like to thank my co-authors listed here. I especially like to thank Northern California Kaiser Permanente. They both funded the project and were active and helpful partners in all aspects of the intervention evaluation. The Center for Community Health and Evaluation that was the prime lead for the evaluation, and of course the wonderful communities and the wonderful work that they did there. Thank you.
So we have time for one question for Ms. Boomer and Lopez, and then we'll open it up to all the panelists. And you can ask them more. Yeah.
Yes.
I
just presented the one. Yeah, all the percents were sales were intercept interviews, and it was just whether or not they purchased the item at all. It was not amounts. We looked at amounts, but didn't really add anything to the picture. Yes.
So I invite all the presenters to come up, and you can ask questions of any of them or all of them, or if you have no questions, then we'll just take a nice picture.
Can you hear me okay if I just sit here?
Yeah.
Part of the rationale of working with the farmers market, being able to use the double up food box is to show people that good food is, because a lot of times it is that economic burden of, I want to eat healthy, but it's expensive to, especially in neighborhoods where it's overpriced. So it's to bring that affordable local food. The sourcing, probably ideally would come through, I guess there could be two ways. I mean, if it's through the food bank, it would be lean, and then it's not necessarily local, but it could be used to bolster at the least the small business of the person who's getting this mobile market going. And then on the flip side, the farmers market has done satellite markets in the past that were pretty successful because they were able to aggregate several farmers, so the farmers would sell, you know, 5% of what they were going to sell to this individual, and that individual would go staff at an individual place, and so it's just a way of getting more of that farmers market food out into the community.
In New York City, at least, the fruit and vegetable vendors are buying their fruit and vegetables on a daily basis from the centralized wholesale market in the South Bronx, I believe, and to the best of my knowledge, the local farms aren't supplying fruit and vegetables there. And there hasn't been much outreach, I don't think, in trying to connect those markets.
We didn't look a lot at sourcing for our study, but I'm currently addressing both of those factors in a West Oakland community where the initiative involves the distributor, a healthy food distributor, and we'll be looking at the impact, and we'll also have a food system model to look at the impact across the food system. So hold your breath, maybe a future meeting will have some interesting results.
And sourcing was considered part of our study.
We have time for one more question, and then, you know, if the presenters are willing to say, maybe we can come up and ask questions individually. So we'll go, Susan.
I wanted to ask in general about getting sales data and the comments for the different kinds of venues. What you had to do in particular with small store sale, how difficult was that? What were the methods you used to get those data? And then from a gift perspective, can you comment at all about the proprietary nature
of the sales data with staff and what you, I know that was part of the design, but do you have any thoughts about what could be, what successful in having retail share their data and so forth? So sales data in general, advice. Sales data from the small stores is very hard to get. I think they don't want to provide it, and their receipts are not very revealing about what they're selling. I think there might be some issues about people don't want you in their books, basically. So it is really hard to get that data. We're very lucky right now with this other study I mentioned where we're working with Mandela Marketplace. And since they actually distribute, it's really nice if you can get it from the distributor, because that's really just as good as how much gets into the store. And they actually come and take away any unsold amount. So it really requires that you have a relationship at that level, but we wanted to get sales data. None of our communities felt they could consistently get good sales data, and receipts were rarely useful in distinguishing what was being sold.
So, and in our case, the data are EBT, SNAP-ed, so it was not a direct relationship with the stores, with the retailers in order to get that data, but was rather relationship with the state entities and then the Food and Nutrition Service, who were the sponsors of the study.
I guess what I'm saying is that's one of the frustrations with SNAP research is that the sales data are proprietary, and so there's been some, you know, interest in trying to have it be made public and so on and so forth. So do you have any thoughts about, since you've had access to those data, Are there any insights that you can share about how valuable they are?
I'd say they're extraordinarily valuable. And we are in the process of, in the publication process, a number of papers using that the EBT in household level SNAP data, looking at questions regarding the percentage of benefits that are spent at supermarkets, relationships with family characteristics, with certain distance characteristics is something that we're exploring in greater detail. I know there are aspects of our HIP data that will be publicly available, and there will be restricted use files that will be made available by FMS. I'm not sure what the timeline is for that. They have the data files, and I'm not sure when they'll be released, but I think it would certainly be my hope that others would be able to get access to these files as well and to conduct similar and other analysis.
Out of respect for everyone's schedule, we're at the end of our time, but if there's still interest, I think we can go up and maybe presenters will stay, but I want to thank them and thank you all for attending, and I hope everyone has safe travel back home, but let's give them a more